don't consider myself a war correspondent. I consider myself a foreign correspondent. I did not get in this job to cover wars. I don't like to get shot at. I don't like people dying in front of me. It's terrible. I get nightmares. I get depressed. Well, what I love is coming to a country and describing the customs, tasting the food, talking to the people, hearing the stories, hearing their music. I'm a musician. I love that.
Şeker ister misiniz?
Orta.
Orta.
Ve su istiyorum orta.
Do you guys want anything else besides tea?
Yeah.
You want the confession?
I
don't really like Turkish chai.
Oh, you don't?
No. It's too bitter, you know? In Iraq, it's fantastic, you know? Yeah, it's too bitter, too strong. And in Iran, I think it's normal. But here, it's...
Some people like it in Iran, but not everybody.
I first went maybe 1 year before the war. To northern Iraq, and I came from Syria, from the Syrian border, across the river in a little boat. I spent 3 weeks in Iraqi Kurdistan, describing this very strange place that developed after the first Iraq war. I came back again maybe 1 month, 2 months before the US invaded Iraq in 2003. And this time I came through Iran. I landed in Tehran and spent one night there, and we drove up to the border and crossed on foot, walking into northern Iraq. But the deadliest time was after the war, and that's when the kidnapping gradually got worse, the car bombs. Everything. I was nearly killed by a car bomb in Najaf, which killed Ayatollah Hakim. It missed us by 50 meters. This was recorded on August 29th, 2003, in Najaf, as I was conducting an interview with an Iraqi there. While I was doing an interview, just like you now, I was interviewing a Pepsi seller in the square in Najaf, next to the Imam Ali Shrine. During Friday prayers, and suddenly an explosion went off. It knocked me and my translator down on the ground. It killed at least 50 people, including Ayatollah Hakim. And it was also a very terrifying moment. My driver was inside the shrine praying. He was safe. Basically an introduction to what would become an everyday incident in Iraq, the suicide bombs.
So you do reporting from here?
I do reporting. Yeah, sure.
It's an internet radio or?
No, it's FM.
I see.
All across the U.S.
Oh, I see.
It's kind of the biggest news radio in the U.S. Mm-hmm. And it does a lot of foreign news.
The Human Rights Watch report documents cases where Kurdish security forces beat prisoners with metal rods, said blindfolded and handcuffed detainees for long periods of time. Human Rights Watch says Kurdish authorities have established a committee to inspect prisons, but add that there has been no discernible improvement in conditions for detainees. Ivan Watson, NPR News, Istanbul.
One of the biggest problems from the very beginning was security. In the first months after the war, journalists were unbelievably safe. We could travel all the way from Fao to northern Iraq, from the Iranian border to the Saudi border. We could travel all over this country that had been closed off from the world. But the area that we could operate gradually got smaller as the criminals got more active, as the insurgents became stronger. We stopped being able to drive on the highways at night. Certain cities became too dangerous for us to travel to. And within a year and a half, 2 years, we couldn't even travel on the roads anymore outside of Baghdad. It was too dangerous. I feel very lucky that I was able to be there in the first 6 months, in the first year, to explore this country somewhat safely. We could drive up to any city, any town, any village, and just talk to people. And they didn't attack us, they didn't kidnap us in those days. And of course, we know how things have changed, how they've gotten worse since then. More journalists have died in Iraq than even in the Vietnam War. The problem with Iraq is it changes every 6 months, every year. The security situation changes, the economic situation changes. I really feel like it's a different country.
Here's an email from my fixer, our stringer in Halabja, in northern Iraq, mm-hmm. And he tells me the news of the day. Mm-hmm. You know, that after a bombing on Saturday, which killed many, many, many people in a village called Amarli, near Tuzhormatu, it may have been the most deadly bombing ever in Baghdad, 140 people killed. No, I've spent some time away from the war now, and I'm not as crazy as I used to be. It used to be when I'd come out of Baghdad, and I'd come back here, during Ramadan, they fire a rocket over Taksim Square, and it used to scare the hell out of me. This big explosion, mm-hmm. to say, okay, you can eat now, mm-hmm. and it would terrify me, big loud noises. We send our stories by satellite phone. The technology allows us to send it in studio quality sound from our microphones right into our headquarters in Washington. And I even use that same satellite phone to send my reports from Istanbul here. So I put this phone here.
We have 28 million listeners every week. It's a very influential radio organization. It does a lot of international news. 50 to 60% of our coverage is of news outside of America. And that's a big deal because in the major television networks in the U.S., unfortunately these days, there's very little foreign news being shown.
And so what I do is I call Washington and read my reports in there.
I never served in the military, and I don't even know how to fire a gun. In the U.S. right now, one of the problems is that a small portion of the society is suffering in this war, while very, very many Americans are not even touched by this war in Iraq. And this is one of the political controversies and issues in America today, is that the burden of this war is being carried by a small number of soldiers and their families, while other people, life goes on as usual. From the soldiers that I've talked to, some of them go because they get credits or loans that they can get education, people who can't afford it. Scholarships, there are a lot of different reasons why people join up. Some do it out of a sense of duty, out of patriotism. Others don't know what they want to do when they reach 18 years old, 19 years old. Some people I met signed up for the military after the September 11th attacks. For some, it's a family tradition to be in the military. There are a lot of different reasons. Then there was the issue of, the biggest issue of always was security. You know, if once the kidnapping started, all the time, we had to take into consideration, is this interview worth risking my life, worth risking the lives of my staff, my translator and my driver? This was always a consideration.
What are these hats? I mean, these helmets?
Two of them came from Iraq. And let's see, these we found on the road in Iraq. Mm-hmm. And this I wear. I would say in the first 6 months after the U.S. invasion, in the first year, there still wasn't an authority. So people were making up the rules for journalists, and we were making up the rules as it went along. But there was danger because there was chaos. If you drove up to an American patrol too quickly, they would pull out their guns and point them at you. I don't look like an Iraqi. Immediately people see me on the street, and they know that I'm a foreigner. And when the kidnapping got really bad, it was really, really dangerous for not only for me, but for the people who worked with me. They could be captured. Sat in the kitchen of our house in Baghdad, and the cook Mona brought in hair dye, and we had a party, and she dyed my hair, and everybody took photos, and they did it. I think two other men did it too, And it's a very funny thing to do. One man, when he went back home to America afterwards, his hair turned bright purple. And it stayed purple for, I think, a month afterwards until the hair color grew out. And it wasn't just the foreigners. Our local staff hated after a while working with me because they knew the moment I stepped out of the car onto the street that I was a foreigner, and that made me and the people working with me a target. My translators would actually ask, please, why don't I go alone and interview this person rather than you come with me? You're just going to risk all of our lives if you're there. This is work.
Ooh.
You know, press IDs, different countries, Palestinian National Authority, Kabul. I think that's Iran, yeah? Northern Iraq, Kazakhstan, Lebanon, Kurdistan. Yeah, but this was in Dubai. Now they have to have government. Iraqi government meetings in Dubai because it's too dangerous. I like people to see me immediately. I am a foreigner, I'm a journalist, I'm an American, and I want to be open and say I'm here to tell your story. I have a lot of listeners in America, and I want to educate them about the rest of the world. And that's my job. I love doing this. So I always want to be very honest with people right away and tell them, listen, this is who I am. I'm a journalist, I'm a foreigner, I'm an American, and sometimes people are more open with me. In other places, you become a target because of that, unfortunately. In August of 2004, the US military had a big battle with the Mahdi army, the Jaish al-Mahdi in Najaf, around the Imam Ali shrine. And I spent 1 week with the US military in their base in Najaf, but they never took me off the base. I flew back to Baghdad, and then I took a very dangerous trip by road, by myself, with my translator and driver back to Najaf. It was one of the most dangerous things I've ever done because you had to drive down a road where foreign journalists had just been kidnapped a few days before, and some of them were killed, French and Italian journalists. We made it safely to Najaf, but it was one of the most terrifying experiences of my life. Then in Najaf, we lived in a small house on the edge of the old city, and each day we would go into the war zone and talk to the civilians who were still living there in the middle of this big war. The moment the battle was over, there was a truce, then we felt in danger from the kidnappers, that they could come in, and so soon after we left for Baghdad. Again, lying in the back of the car, trying to hide from all the kidnappers. I have been in Sierra Leone, I have been in Liberia, I have been in Chechnya, I lived in Nigeria. It's a very dangerous city, Lagos. Worked in Afghanistan, in Pakistan, in places where there are very unsafe conditions. I have never taken the steps or seen the same kind of dangers and threats as in Iraq. Some journalists who were killed by the US military. During the invasion, an American tank fired on the Palestine Hotel and killed a couple of journalists. There was a Palestinian cameraman killed by Abu Ghraib in the first year by American soldiers. There were other incidents like this as well. Al-Arabiya a TV crew. I think they were killed. It's one of the most tragic things, I think, for the Iraqi people, because if anybody would be there trying to show their story, it's the reporters. And we, within a year and a half, couldn't easily talk to Iraqi people. We couldn't trust that we wouldn't be kidnapped. We know that more journalists have died in Iraq than even during the Vietnam War. And while foreigners have been killed and wounded, including friends of mine, the Iraqi journalists, far more Iraqi journalists, have been killed. And they seem to get targeted, murdered, assassinated almost every week. In the first 6 months of the U.S. occupation, I predicted that the situation would deteriorate. Having seen Chechnya and having read about Beirut, I predicted that there would be car bombs and that there would be kidnappings eventually. And unfortunately, that prediction has come true, and it is actually become worse than both Beirut in the 1980s and Chechnya in the 1990s. I think there are very few Iraqis who would say life is better now than it was 5 years ago. With the exception, perhaps, of the Kurds. Maybe in the Shia areas, I'm not sure though. I haven't been there in a long time. I don't think anybody in Baghdad will say life is better. I think I have the best job in the world, except when it gets dangerous.
On Wednesday, a suicide car bomber hit the interior ministry in the normally peaceful Kurdish city of Erbil, killing 15 people and wounding more than 100.
Ivan Watson, NPR News, Istanbul.
Iraq would sound something like this.